Man, I really need to brush up on my joke writing skills.
Hard week, man.
Ugh, totally. I just couldn't sink my teeth into writing anything good.
Maybe just write a punny story.
I don't know. I'm just completely out of all of it. Josh, I don't know. Do you have any ideas?
Once upon a time, a Lear left through the Colgate on a quest for the Arm and Hammer of Sensodyne to go create a crest using the magical mineral waters of Aquafresh.
Hot damn, nailed it.
4 to 5 reviewers agree that Fire Emblem Engage is the right tactical RPG for you.
Warning, Fire Emblem Engage may cause heartache, spontaneous relationship forming, and only talking to friends while holding rings. Alir! The Fel Dragon armies have teleported onto our ship, and we cannot hold them!
Don't tell me that we cannot do. Go help them out, Alfred!
I'm not sure, Captain, if I can do this!
Make it so, number one!
Grrr.
Engage!
Now this is a story all about how Matt's life got flipped, turned upside down, and I'd like to take a minute, just pet your cat, I'll tell you how Matt became the Prince of Backtrack. In Western Florida, born and raised, in his bedroom is where Matt spent most of his days. Chilling out, maxing, relaxing, all cool and all, playing Nintendo outside of the school. When his homeboy called, who had a podcast show, said, "Join this site, give it a go." Matt wrote a couple reviews, then paused, took a crack, and said, "You're recording a podcast with Kelly called Backtrack." He called for an Uber, and when it came near, the license plates had cats in it and mice in the mirror. If anything, he could say this car caused a fuss, but he thought, "Nah, forget it, you're home to Kansas." He got to Kelly's house about 8 or 9, and he yelled to the Uber, "Yo, Holmes, just in time." He looked at Kel's kingdom, and he knew it'd be whack to sit by the throne of the Queen of Backtrack.
Hello and welcome to RPG Backtrack, your regular deep dive into your favorite RPGs. We are a production of RPGamer.com, bringing you such fine podcasts like RPG Cast, your weekly RPG news show, Q&A Quest, your weekly RPG feedback show, and us, your bi-weekly RPG nostalgia show. I am your host, Kelly Ryan, and with me, as always, my podcast partner in crime, the Marth to my Roy, Mr. Matt Basem.
I am not ready to engage in this discussion at all.
You're not ready to become one with the divine VTuber?
Not at all. Listen, my only Fire Emblem history is slashing like 100 foes at once. If we're not, warriors, heroes, which one is it? I can't remember which Musou.
Warriors, yeah.
Warriors, yes. Yeah. I've played both of those, but I have not engaged with any other part of the series.
But Matt, I thought you were our Star Trek guy. No?
I'll engage warp engines and zoom out of here.
That voice you heard was Josh Carpenter.
Hi.
And we've got our resident Fire Emblem expert, Cassandra Ramos.
Hello, everybody.
So not sure if this is your favorite game in the series or not. Probably not.
Oh, I'd say it's at the lower end.
Not going to be many fights over that at this time, I don't think.
But yeah.
We are talking about Fire Emblem Engage. One of the less loved games in the series.
Perhaps forgettable? I've been trying to struggle to remember what happened in this and watching videos, and it's been like, oh yeah, some of that happened. Oh, okay.
Forgettable is definitely the word.
And it's strange because they clearly wanted this one to be a celebration of the series, which we'll get into during the main event. And because of it, they just didn't make anything remarkable.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know Three Houses was a tough act to follow, but it didn't even trash.
Yeah. Well, with that rousing intro, at least the music is good in the game. We'll have a brief musical interlude, and then we'll come back and dive right in. And welcome back to RPG Backtrack, where we are talking about Fire Emblem Engage, released worldwide on January 20th, 2023. Now, I said this was an anniversary game. I did some looking. This was supposed to release in 2020 to celebrate the franchise's 30th anniversary, but because of the COVID thing, it got delayed a couple of years, apparently. And was in development at around the same time as Three Houses.
So,
I did not know any of that.
I didn't know Intelligent Systems did multiple teams working at the same time.
Yeah, that's crazy. And it was announced during September 2022 Nintendo Direct, which surprised the hell out of me. It was like, oh god, a new Fire Emblem game. One of the first ones to be created in the Unity game engine, and its character designs were done by freelance artist Mika Picasso. I probably butchered that name, but I guess she's a famous manga artist and most well known for designing VTubers.
And it really shows on the character designs.
Yes, it does. This is a very colorful cast of characters for good and bad, because when that trailer dropped, everybody was like, wow, that main character is a choice.
Yeah. How many
a reason to have the two-tone design, but
yeah, but we joked on RPGcast for months about Colgate Coon.
And she has a reason for the design, though, because getting into story spoilers, doesn't she have kind of a split personality thing going on with
the blue hair for the divine dragon and the red hair for the fell dragon, right?
Yeah.
They're like, they were a fell, or at least, or possibly half fell dragon, and don't entirely go into it. But then she she met the divine dragon, queen, whose name is escaping me right now. She became her adopted daughter and took on some of her characteristics. So she's fell dragon, half divine dragon.
Now, is this one of the first games in the series where you could play as one of the divine dragons character?
You could argue that Orin is a divine dragon because they can actually transform to a dragon. Aaliyah, despite being called divine dragon repeatedly, never transforms.
Darn.
Corrin's father was Anankos, who is a godlike dragon, not technically a divine dragon, but sort of kind of.
And what game is, what did you say, Soren?
Corrin from Fates.
Oh, Orin from Fates. Okay.
Yeah, remember it's a weird deer-like dragon.
Yeah, it's been a hot minute since I've played Fates.
Well, remember, you had to play all three routes to actually get all the story for that.
Right.
No, you had to play the DLC.
Right. Oh, that's right. That was in the DLC. Oh, goodness. That's right.
Yeah, not just play all three routes, but also play some of the DLC to get the full story.
Yeah, because I only played Birthright.
Yeah, Birthright, I don't think ever touches up. Like, Anankos doesn't even show up, except in Revelation.
Yeah.
But so in the story, you wake up and your mom says that you're a divine dragon. And
you have amnesia.
Yeah, of course. The mom dies because I knew that
the Fire Emblem
die.
Game. Yeah. She dies a little sooner than other Fire Emblem parents. But she's like one chapter later, she's dead.
And you're basically trying to get the 12 divine rings to seal the dark dragon back away. And they're scattered amongst four different kingdoms. So you have to, for lack of a better term, engage with the other kingdoms to get their rings. And the special thing about each ring is that it has the soul of a Fire Emblem character, like from the classic games.
Yep. And I just wonder what's so special about this world that this apparently the spirits of these lords are spending their afterlife over there, you know?
Don't know. Apparently this was the first game in the mainline series to directly feature characters from the core titles, since Gaiden. So, yeah, I appreciated that it was meant to kind of celebrate the games beforehand, and when your character equips the rings, they take on the traits from some of the famous characters like Marth and Roy and, who else shows up?
Lucina. We've got, shoot up the list. Don't I have the list right here?
Celica, Sigard, yes. Leaf, Roy, of course. Yeah, Lynn.
Lynn, yeah.
Erica.
Erica and Ephraim, Ike, Kaya, and Corrin, and Byleth. And the DLC has a bunch of other characters, too.
Tiki, Soren, Hector, Camellia, Crom and Robin, and Veronica.
And the three houses leaders, too. Edelgar, Dimitri, and Claude.
Yeah, I'm looking at a list of them right now. But I thought that was a very interesting concept. And yeah, once you do engage mode while wearing the rings, you're pretty OP.
Very. It only lasts for 3 turns, and it couldn't help it. It keeps reminding me, like, it's something out of, like, a Tokusatsu show, like, you know, Power Rangers type deal, or even a Magical Girl anime.
Like, you power up.
Seriously.
Yeah, because when the bad guys have the rings and they power up, aren't the characters, like, red-haired to indicate they're the bad versions?
Yeah, they're red tinge. Like, the bad guys don't get the engage glow up, but
I remember
on the battlefield all red.
I remember seeing Lucina showing up all red. I think she's one of the first ones that shows up as a bad guy, and it's like, no, Lucina, my favorite girl. But I did think that was an interesting mechanic, and you bond with the rings and have different paralogues involving each character, which I thought was kind of neat.
That was, and the maps, I believe, directly come from their home game too.
Yeah. Because I started with Awakening, I did not recognize a lot of the maps.
No, it was pretty, like, at least before, like, I don't completely remember, like, say, the maps for Lynn's game, but it was kind of neat to recognize, like, Lake's map, since I played that game so many times.
Yeah.
Radiance.
Just kind of interesting that they had this anniversary title when the U.S., didn't get Fire Emblem games until the Game Boy Advance generation. So some characters being kind of lost on people.
Mm-hmm. Although I do wonder if we'll see Sigurd and maybe Leaf sooner or later. I'm still holding out hope that they're remaking Genealogy of the Holy War and maybe Thracian 776, since those games are so linked.
Yeah,
that would be very nice. Because I'd love to go back to some of the older games, but having the modern quality of life features in them, just to experience them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to play with permadeath anymore, Kel?
Nope. I'm too old and too frustrated for that stuff. Though, a side effect with playing on casual mode like I do is that you end up with so many characters, because I guess you're kind of the new ones are kind of meant to replace people that have died so that you're not completely screwed. And I didn't end up using half of the characters on this roster.
I mean, unfortunately, that's supposed to be, that's quote unquote, I guess, normal. I don't know if it's right. Like that's at least that's my experience with the earlier Fire Emblems. And it was just kind of neat, because that means, I mean, I kind of started a second playthrough mostly to refresh my memory on the game, and I want to use different characters. That's what I did in earlier games. Like, I even like for Path of Radiance, I even used the characters that are very unpopular, like Makalov and Devdin, just because I didn't try them before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not every character is good, but it's at least kind of fun to try different ones, different playthroughs. And this game, like, you can't really level up the characters too much.
So just like with Three Houses, you get access to a sprawling base that encompasses various side activities, like Panzer Dragoon, apparently. I don't know how much you guys engaged with the the shoot 'em up minigame?
I did it like once.
Yeah, I think I only did it like once or twice.
Yeah, but also stuff like an arena for training or doing sit-ups with certain characters to get stat gains. Having tea parties, obviously. Though I think this is the first game in a while that hadn't had a waifu mechanic.
I mean, that no, if you have a Leer go to sleep and they wake up, there will be, like, you hear a character, like, talk to themselves, and then the Leer wakes up, and you get, like, a close-up of that character. So, that's one way to get, like, a close-up of them.
Okay.
They have to have something like that.
It's about as subtle as they can be.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just seemed like one of the first games that they didn't really go nuts with any of the friendship stuff like they had with the past games.
I mean, I kind of missed, like, I don't think any of the characters have, like, a paired ending with each other than with Aaliyah if they choose to do the S rank. And I kind of missed that, because even the older Fire Emblem games had that, like, certain characters would pair up and they would get married according to their paired ending. I like to play matchmaker. I miss that. Like, the closest thing we get is, like, what's her name? Lapis seemingly crushing on Allcrest, but that's all it ever is. Like, they don't really go too much into it into their supports.
I like the pairing. I don't like agonizing over who is the perfect pairing, because I'm always afraid I'm going to mess it up, especially when they have kids that come into the game.
Well, that's on this game.
Yeah. But I heard a lot of people say that they didn't really like the base stuff in this game compared to Three Houses.
It does make it feel like the game drags on. I spent like 80 hours on my first playthrough doing a lot of those activities. And it's really hard to build up supports in this game, too.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie, I skipped a lot of the dialogue for characters that had support conversations that I just didn't care about. I mostly talk to them just to get the symbol off of my map.
I mean, I guess the supports weren't exactly very memorable. That's true, but it's one way to find out more about these characters, you know?
Yeah.
To find out more about these characters.
I was just very fatigued by the time I hit I want to say chapter 20, and I was like, okay, it's time to move this to the final couple of chapters. Plus, like, halfway through the game, they take away all of your rings.
They do that twice.
Yeah.
The story itself is kind of repetitive. It is very much like you're searching for the MacGuffins. Oh no, you lost all the MacGuffins. Well, here's one you can start over looking for all the MacGuffins again. It's mm-hmm.
Here, find this different set of MacGuffins while you're trying to get your original set back.
I mean, it's a relatively basic story and very reminiscent of Awakening with the whole Divine Dragon and Fel Dragon and trying to prevent the Fel Dragon's, you know, maybe not awakening because he's already awake, but his complete is like getting all his powers back. Whoops, his powers are back anyway. Although although Sombron, the Fel Dragon's name, is like he has a slightly interesting reason other than just he doesn't want to just destroy the world. He wants to get revenge on his old world because he's actually from some other world. And if he destroys Elios in the process, he doesn't care.
So is he a reference to one of the earlier games or not? Or we don't know.
I mean, the Fel Dragon brings to mind Grima from Awakening.
Yeah, you know, both called
Fel Dragon, but. Otherwise, other than that, no. Like, I mean, they're kind of similar in that they both can, like, resurrect the dead to act as their soldiers, but they're presumably unrelated. Like, they don't even look all that similar. Grima's like the size of a Manhattan, and Sombron could fit in a capsule. And Sombron also has they mentioned, like, one last apparent emblem ring that doesn't actually show up in the game, called the Emblem of Foundations, or the Zero Emblem. And it's a complete mystery as to whether it refers to another character in the series or not. My personal fan theory is actually really, it's Henri, which is a character from Shadow Dragon's backstory.
Oh.
That's just my personal fan theory.
So they brought back the weapons triangle for this one.
Mm-hmm.
And they also got rid of item durability, which I can't remember if that happened in Three Houses or not.
I think there was durability. I believe there was.
Okay.
But yeah, although like staves still have a limited number of uses.
Yeah. Yeah, I remembered that. And it's like, on the one hand, it was nice not to have to worry about durability, but because of that, I felt like there wasn't really a good variety of weapons to pick from.
Because,
you know, you're being able to constantly swap out weapons in the original games meant that you got access to a lot of cool ones.
Yeah, you would always have those super powerful weapons that you'd only get like four or five uses of, and you'd have to kind of like dole them out and save them for boss battles, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then this one also had a break mechanic that I remember that was used particularly on bosses that took up like several tiles.
And it does add an interesting dimension to the weapons triangle, because you can break a character by using the weapon that they're weak against. So you disarm them and then you can attack, and then they're unable to defend themselves and you can keep attacking them. Or, of course, it could be bad if it happens on your end.
Yeah.
Your character gets attacked by
So it would kind of set up the strategy of like using one of your characters to do to break the enemy using the weapons triangle, and then that way they can't counterattack and all your other party members can kind of just pile on.
Yeah, that was particularly handy for some of those multi-tile big dragon type enemies.
I mean, the other big change they made was just like the maps themselves tended to be a little bit smaller than in previous games, and that they dialed back the character movement a bit. Mm-hmm. I think all the characters got to move like one square less than they did in most of the previous games.
Yeah, I thought the map size in this game seemed a little on the small side.
I don't know if that was like a, you know, like if that was a conscious choice that they really wanted to go for, or if that was a way of like trying to like hem in the development cycle to just make the map smaller.
Maybe, you know, six of one, half dozen of the other.
Yeah, you definitely didn't have like the big sprawling epic maps that you sometimes get in previous games where you're like really fighting your way across a huge plain. Like, you didn't really have that same sort of thing.
Oh, but I thought the terrains was more varied, or there was like you could like create bottlenecks against enemies and such. Like I kind of find like the wide open maps a little boring because they're just walking across it.
Well, and sometimes in the older games you get hosed when you'd push on too quickly and then enemy reinforcements would come in on a set turn in your rear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I felt like they really didn't want you turtling in this game by giving you enforcements to kind of keep you constantly moving.
Mm-hmm.
So talking about the character designs, I have to admit, I think this game has some of the most ridiculous character designs I've ever seen in a Fire Emblem game.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not dissing that lady's artwork by any stretch of the imagination, because I love a colorful character, but some of it was kind of distracting in this game. Like the one character that had pom-poms all over her. Like, I can't even remember her name, but I just remember seeing that. It's like, that does not seem practical for battle.
Oh, yeah, Tamara. Yes.
The other one having a dress that I swear to God did not move. Was that? That was a princess character that showed up very early.
Hortensia, maybe, or maybe Ivy. They both have very loud outfits, and Hortensia's hair reminds me of some kind of candy.
Yeah, she had some pretty crazy hair. So did Ivy. Dang it, I had a picture open with crazy dress lady, but now I can't find it. And she was one of my best characters, but I found that dress so distracting. It's like, why would you wear something with that many petticoats in a fight?
Maybe that was Saline. She's got like the butterflies in her, like simply some kind of hairpin.
Yeah.
Yeah, not a very practical outfit.
Oh, none of them really had practical outfits. Well, maybe the archers. I also noticed that this one didn't have nearly the amount of class customization that the Three Houses did.
Well, that's fine. Like, there was actually relatively, like, the amount of classes was relatively small in Three Houses. It felt like, at least once you get up to the higher, like, the higher level classes. And there's actually quite a few interesting classes here. Like, they introduced the Wolf Knight, the Wing Tamer, different types of Pegasus Knights. There were like what equipped with swords or axes. Even had a dancer. I haven't had a dancer in a while. I guess it was a dancer in Three Houses. I keep forgetting that that whole, like, was it like a side quest you had to do to get one character to become a dancer?
I think so.
Yeah.
Gosh, Three Houses feels like so long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Pandemic times.
And I still need to play the sort of sequel to that, the Musou game. It was Celine that had the crazy dress.
Okay, yes, it was. Okay, also Celine.
But what else do we want to talk about?
Let me think here. No, I guess other than the emblem rings, you had the bond rings. Like the character couldn't talk to you, but it was just kind of neat to be able to equip everybody with a ring that increased their stats.
Oh, and right.
Another character from the game that the emblems came from.
I completely forgot about this game's in-game gotcha stuff.
Yes. Yes, it's a gotcha.
Because what did you need? Friendship points?
Bond fragments, they're called.
Bond fragments for that. And it's like, on the one hand, it was kind of neat to acknowledge a lot of my favorite side characters from the series. But on the other hand, I felt like I was always at a loss for Bond fragments.
Yep.
Because didn't you get them from the map?
You got them. You could get them from a bunch of different, like, that's another reason this game can take so long. Because you can get them on the maps. After you beat a map, you can walk around the map and talk to every character, usually just making some kind of comment on the environment. Or they'll be like, oh, I leveled up last battle or whatever. And then they'll give you bond fragments. So you want to talk to each of them to see which ones will give you bond fragments. And then how else can you get them? You can get them on the Somniel, which is like the hub area, doing various things on there. And you can get we didn't mention Sami, the famous mascot.
The dog.
Dog, cat. Teddy bear. I don't think it has tail feathers. It's just generic mammals, and it's supposed to be the guardian spirit of the Somniel.
And you can put hats on it, and it follows you around.
Yes.
And you can feed it.
Pet it.
And it helps you with some of the mini games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think in the Panzer Dragoon mini game, it adds like a walk-on feature to that. I played a lot of the Panzer Dragoon mini game, if you couldn't tell.
We noticed.
Just because it was something interesting to do, other than try to grind up characters in fights. But yeah, I completely forgot about the gacha mechanic. I feel like a lot of single-player games have those lately. Like, I know Xenoblade 2 was pretty notorious for having that. And one I played recently, Grand Blue Fantasy Relink, having it too, though that was a mobile game, so that kind of makes sense. But
you could probably thank mobile games for that feature showing up a lot.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of crazy they put it into these, same with Xenoblade, where they're still not, like, monetizing it. They're just putting it in and making you do it.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they want you to have that same dopamine hit?
Probably.
I guess. I don't know. I'm just like, not the right person for it, because I just find it frustrating.
Yeah.
Like, what I do like is, like if you get duplicates of a character, there's three levels. There's C rank, A rank, B. Actually, there's four levels and S rank. And if you get a bunch of duplicates, you can combine them to get the higher level character.
Mm-hmm.
So I did have a lot of fun doing that.
Hmm.
And yeah, I forgot to mention that the ring thing ties into your character customization, because you can. That's how you learn additional moves and additional stats.
Mm-hmm.
You equip a ring, you increase your bond level with it, and you spend points to gain some of their abilities.
You can also get additional dialogue between the emblem and the character you have it equipped to. They're kind of, short and forgettable, but they're there if you want to watch them.
And if you want to make the character happier, you can polish the ring.
Polish their ring, yes.
Because it's not a Fire Emblem game unless there's a creepy rubbing mini game. But at least you're not blowing on their faces this time.
Mm.
I never did that in Fates.
Well, you couldn't really. You couldn't. You can rub them in Fates if you got that out of the live version.
See, I thought that there was a thing on the DS games where you could blow into the microphone to wake them up.
I don't know if that was cut or not. I know you can't, like, rub them.
Well. Maybe it's for the best. So because of our spotty memories of this game, it's one of those things to where when I played it, I found myself neither hating it nor loving it. just kind of like that. That was certainly a game.
It felt soulless, you know. It was like a game where they were very much, they put it together. They wanted to do this homage to the series. We want to bring, you know, we want to hit all the different major characters from all the different games. We're doing this for the fans. But it just didn't have a lot of soul at its core.
Yeah, like, it was just, yeah, there was just, like, no, like, the characters just, like, I had a very hard time remembering any of them. The only one I liked to any amount was Yunaka, because she had a neat personality and a really interesting backstory. But I had forgotten most of the other characters by the time, like before this podcast, and I had to, like, replay a bit and look at like a list online for the different character names and such.
That's me. It was like trying to like refresh my memory, and I'm just like, I'm going through this and I'm like, who were these characters? I'm watching videos. I'm like, I can vaguely remember what happened, but none of this stuff stuck with me.
Like the story is basic, and like even like the history and lore of this world just feels really undercooked compared to Three Houses.
Like I said, everything was almost in service of, you know, just the idea. We've got to get all of the characters back into the game. How do we do that? And thus everything ends up coming up in service to that. And then everything else was kind of like a afterthought.
Yes. Again, like I said before, like I understand Three Houses is a tough act to follow. Mm-hmm. Didn't even try.
Oof.
It really didn't even try.
I mean, the fact that they were working on both of these at the same time kind of shows that there was definitely an A team and a B team. And when it came time for the B team to shine, then that's when COVID happened and they couldn't put the polish on this game that they put into Three Houses. And it definitely shows. Because I was having a hard time trying to remember the story until I looked it up. And I was like, oh, yeah, bad dragon versus good dragon.
Yeah.
And the repetition and you know, like, oh yeah, you collect the rings, you lose the rings, you collect the rings again, you lose the rings again, you collect the rings. It was just, you know, ridiculous.
could even see Aaliyah becoming an emblem coming.
Uh-huh.
It's like, well, they are the lord of this game, so that tracks.
And the villain characters just being so forgettable, kind of showing up as just a ragtag band of mooks, and then you fight each one, and then most of them end up joining you at the end anyway.
Mm-hmm. And that was another thing, like it was so easy to tell, like, there were very few characters where it was just like, they're there on the map, and you recruit them while they're out in the field. Like a lot of them are like the princes and princesses would join. Often their sibling would also join, and then each of them had two retainers.
Mm-hmm.
So you knew who was going to be recruited, and there was very little like, this character's on this map, you got to talk to them in order to get them to join you. Very few of that.
I think the only character I remember that even joined like that was Jean, the little kid.
Yeah, the paralogue. I recently recruited Jade, who I think is supposed to be Diamant's other retainer, but she's doesn't join along with Diamant, but is just there on the map. And I think there's that dancer guy, what's his name? Seedoll is also just kind of there on the map, and you have to recruit. I think you have to talk to him to recruit him. I don't think he joins automatically. But yeah, otherwise but there's no like optional recruitments, or very, very little.
Correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't Aaliyah end up having like a twin sister at some point, or a twin sibling?
They have a sibling, yes. It's revealed later that Sombron the Fell Dragon had a bunch of his children join in the fight. A lot of them died either during battle or he killed them himself if he didn't like their performance. Bale is the, like she actually has a, like she has an alternate identity because she's either her good side or her evil side, and eventually somehow she seals away the evil side or something and joins you.
Well, she also had the horns that they put on her to help control her into.
They did. Oh, the right. I forgot the. Okay, I did forget that plot point.
it's all very forgettable.
Yeah. I mean, I remembered she's apparently half mage dragon, but again, we don't get to actually see her turn it. There's like, there's her, and then you have on the bad guy, Zephia, who's apparently a mage dragon, but do you ever get to see him the dragons? Nope, you just got to take their word for it.
Like, oh wait, those horns were functional. I just thought that was another wacky VTuber character design.
Now, that was a plot point in the middle of the game. Like, they were keeping her in the, you know, the evil fell dragon side of her personality.
Mm-hmm. Which version of Valir did each of us play? Because I played the female one.
Female, yeah.
Female.
Okay.
We're all female characters, yeah.
I don't know why. That design just looked so much better with her than it did with the male version.
I think that was part of it for me, too. Was like, I think the female character, I'm like, I don't know why, but that ridiculous color hair kind of works on the female character model and not so much on the male for me.
Yeah. And I also couldn't help but be mildly disappointed that this was the first Fire Emblem game in about 10 years that didn't have an amiibo of the main character. And she would have looked so cool as an amiibo.
It just would have been another thing for Alice to knock off of your shelves, Kelly.
I know, but I did like her character design a lot more than some of the others, just because, yeah, hers was, despite the crazy hair, hers was somewhat practical. So I was disappointed that she didn't get an amiibo. And hey, I've locked a bunch of that stuff down with museum putty, so she's left those alone now that she figured out that she can't knock those over.
You're mean, Kelly. You're mean.
Oh, she's. I've got decoy stuff for her to knock over that she misses with plenty. But yeah, and I don't even know if this game even had any amiibo support.
It did have. Yes, it does have amiibo functionality because I did it. It basically unlocks different music you can play during the map.
Okay.
And, think like a exclusive accessory, because you can, like, while they're on the Somniel, the characters dress casually. Arguably some of their outfits look a little too modern, but you can also like dress up with different accessories and the amiibos unlock those.
Okay, I don't think I bothered, because when it comes to music tracks, I don't really pay attention to the music in the bass, especially in the bass, because you just hear it so much it kind of tunes out.
I think it was music for like the battle maps, not for the Somniel itself, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, if you're in major need of a Fire Emblem fix and you've played Three Houses too much and you want to give this game a try, you can get it for as cheap as $30 on eBay. I don't know how to recommend this one, because it is just such a meh game.
Meh explains it.
Yeah, it's difficult to talk about, because like I don't know that there's anything in it that's terrible. I don't think any of us totally care for the characters or the story. It's not bad. It's just, it's not terribly, neither the characters nor the story is terribly compelling.
Yeah.
And the gameplay is just like, it's okay. It's Fire Emblem gameplay. Yeah, I don't know that it's, oh, go ahead.
It's not like a complete throwback to the old titles at all. Like, there's still a lot of maps that are just like, beat all enemies or beat the boss. I kind of miss titles where there's like, you know, defend this place for a certain amount of turns or escape. Nothing like that. It's probably, but yeah,
like some of those could be brutally difficult, but they were like interesting and difficult and you know, like broke up the gameplay. Yeah.
Exactly.
This one was much more like straightforward, and like nothing about it is bad, but nothing about it is like incredibly compelling either there. So you have this game that is just like, it is Fire Emblem content.
it is more Fire Emblem if you're craving more Fire Emblem.
Yes,
exactly.
But it's not very remarkable.
No,
I think literally the one thing that it has going for it in its favor is getting to see your favorite characters pop up again.
Yes, that's pretty neat. And hearing them voiced, I get this, especially since I don't play Fire Emblem. Is it Hero? Yeah, Hero.
Yeah,
is the mobile. So I haven't heard any of these characters like voiced in English. But that's Mikaya. Technically, they have an English voice actress, but that's, you know, Radiant Dawn, and the voice acting in that game is not good.
We era voice acting
Her name is escaping me right now. But here, why is her voice escaping me? Right, Veronica Taylor. How did I forget her? So hearing a voice by Veronica Taylor was really neat. And another neat, like, I don't know how often he does video games, but Clan is voiced by Justin Briner, the voice of Deku in My Hero Academia.
Oh, so cool. That was
really neat. Maybe someday Lucy Christian will be in a Fire Emblem game.
But, yes, I apologize for this not being a more interesting backtrack, but to be honest, it's not an very interesting game. We wanted to talk about it because it came up on the two-year deadline, and it's like, should we do an engage backtrack? Like,
it's
I don't
Fire
know.
Emblem. It's a mainline Fire Emblem.
Yeah, and that's what kills me, is it being a mainline Fire Emblem game when it feels like a side game. And did either of you guys play Three Hopes? The Musou.
I didn't.
I have not gotten around to that. I played the first Musou, but not Three Hopes.
I think Matt played it.
Yeah.
But he's on the treadmill right now. It feels from what I've heard from Three Hopes, it feels like that more love was put into Three Hopes as a Three Houses sequel than this was.
Yeah.
Mm. And to me, that's kind of sad.
Yeah.
And especially with it being a mainline title. I don't know, maybe they could have done a Fire Emblem Greatest Hits thing or something. Well, I mean, that's what it is. I only played a little bit of Heroes, and that's what this game felt like.
It very much does. I mean, it's also got that kind of structure, you know, going around collecting all the old characters from the game. And you just kind of have the story that sort of gives you the reason to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. An excuse clause.
Uh-huh. It's what it feels like.
So yeah, if I was going to recommend this game, I would definitely wait for a sale or get it at a heavily discounted price, because I didn't think it... I even bought the collector's edition. I forgot that I did that. And Josh, I didn't know you ended up with two of them.
Well, we'll get to that story. Was that because of me? It might have been. We'll get to that story.
Okay. Well, I think we're ready for the roundtable, unless we have any other mad points we want to bring up.
Yeah, like you were mentioning earlier, Kelly, this is a weird one, especially for like the American fandom, where most people didn't really become fans until Awakening. And, you know, you have all these games either that never came out in English, or even if they did come out in English, they were not, you know, huge sellers back then. So it's I don't know that it's one of those games that's really going to click with people. I think, you know, looking around, I don't know that the people have a lot of hate for this game, but there's not really a whole lot of love for it either. And I think some of that is just, you know, the kind of things that sort of mobile gotcha, we're going to bring all your favorite characters back, but, you know, you've only played four of these games. Like, that's part of probably why it falls apart.
Mm-hmm. And it feels unnecessary as a celebration of the series, because there's already Heroes. Like, we don't really need this.
No.
And maybe that's what it was, is that they wanted an easier game for people that have played Heroes to get into, and that's what this one was for. But they didn't advertise it like that. Mm-hmm. And they certainly didn't price it like that.
So this is the game I should be playing?
No.
Since I played Heroes? I've heard all your meh-ness.
Yeah, it's just, and I always feel bad for meh games, because it's like, you did nothing wrong, you just weren't very interesting.
Yeah.
Meh games are always the toughest to talk about, because it's just like, I don't have anything critical really to say, other than just like, man, you were kind of boring, but you weren't bad. You know, like, poke it with a stick, do something, come on.
Yeah. And Josh, didn't you play a Summon Knight game that was supposed to be an anniversary game that felt the same way?
Yes, Summon Knight 6. I was so excited for that, because I played 5, really liked it, thought the series was interesting, got the review copy for 6, and it was that anniversary thing, and it was just like, here's a crap ton of characters that have never been seen before in English. Have fun. Aren't you excited to see this guy you've never seen before? Nope. Yeah, that's a good callback, Kel. It's very, very similar to this sort of experience.
Probably even worse, since we've only got Summon Knight 5 and the Swordcraft story spinoff.
Exactly, yeah, that was it.
That was it. And even still, I still think Summon Night was kind of more interesting. It's still probably the plot was kind of more interesting and more compelling than this one.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just the sheer weirdness of Summon Night coming out that makes it stick in my mind more, but...
And that was a Vita game, so nobody probably played that.
Yeah, probably not. That was one of those that Vic Ireland's most recent publishing house put out.
Gaijin Works.
Yeah, Gaijin Works, that's right.
I don't even know if they're still around.
It's been dark for quite a while.
Because I had ordered some of that stuff from that company, and it was very much an early version of limited run games where I pre-ordered this and like, okay, I hope I didn't just throw my money away. And then 6 months later, it's like, oh, I got something in the mail for myself, like a Christmas present from the future.
It's been so long, I'd forgotten. Oh, yeah.
And yeah, the Gaijin Works site still says Summon Night 6
available. Is that their last release?
Yep.
Aw.
R.I.P. I don't even think they have a forum anymore.
You know he'll pop up again.
Yeah, to complain about the Lunar re-release, probably.
Probably.
No, be good, Lunar. Get no complaints.
Yeah, we'd love a new Lunar that isn't a shitty DS game.
Hmm. I think I've heard that backtrack.
I still have nightmares about that game. Oh, and okay, before we do the roundtable, one more thing. Did anybody play the DLC?
Nope.
No.
Okay. nobody wanted to, they were so mad, nobody wanted to waste their money.
I still haven't finished the game, Kel. I've still got like 2 chapters left.
Okay. You don't want to tear off. You don't want to tear off the Band-Aid yet?
No, not yet.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the roundtable because I'm dying to know this 2 Collector's Edition story. So we'll be right back. Welcome back to RPG Backtrack, where we are now getting into the roundtable, our personal thoughts, our feelings. Do we even have personal thoughts and feelings about this game?
Meh.
Sort of.
Meh. Was there a funny moment that you guys found amusing?
Boy, I'm struggling, Kel. I'm struggling.
So I had to look at the TV Tropes page, but I do remember this. When you meet Prince Alchrist, and he shoots at Alir with his arrows because he thinks that she's a bad guy, and then realizes that she's the divine dragon, and jumps in front of her and begs her for an apology, begged her to forgive him in a very over-the-top anime moment that definitely made me chuckle when I was playing.
That's a pretty good anime sort of trope.
Yeah, I mean, I know that Fire Emblem is the big serious game, but I appreciate funny anime moments in some of these. And I'm sure that there were more in this one, since this one seemed a little bit more lighthearted.
Yes, I'd say so. Not that I can really remember too many funny scenes.
So I'm not going to blame you guys if you don't have any funny scenes you want to talk about.
I mean, I kind of like when Yunaka introduced herself, she said, "Hiya, papaya." I've never on that kind of a movement.
Yep, that's cute. So did you guys have a favorite character?
Again, for me, it's Yunaka. Like, she's funny, she's got a cute personality, and she got a dark backstory because she used to be an assassin, and she's trying her best to hide that.
Yeah, she ended up being my favorite, too, not only because of her personality, but because she ended up being, like, a killer damage dealer for me.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could remember who I paired her up with that just made her an unstoppable killing machine.
It would have a Lear S-ranker.
Yeah. go ahead.
No, I do have a memory of liking Tamara, but maybe that's just because of the insane character design just makes her stick out more in my brain than some of the other characters do.
Was that one of the ones that was like way out there?
Yes.
With the I don't know, the baubles on her head.
Yeah, pom poms almost. Yeah.
That oh one. Yeah. Yeah. that's some desert wear, all right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, sure.
So, were there any memorable fights for you guys?
In my, there is one fight, like I think a little past midway in the game, where the time crystal, because we forgot it has a time rewinding function called the draconic time crystal.
Mm-hmm.
They actually take that away from you from one fight. But I think you actually do have to. It's like one of the very few maps where there's something to do than just defeat all enemies. They actually have to escape from the map. So that stuck out to me as just one of the few maps where it's not just defeat all enemies or defeat the boss.
Mm-hmm. See, everything was so easy for me. I barely used the rewind time crystal in this. Typically, if I can't get things in one shot, I'll pass my turn or try to get to a point where I can one shot things. So I don't think I noticed that fight. As for me, I thought that this was a nice touch, and calling against the anniversary thing. One of the last boss fights, where you had, I think you had to get some of the rings back. Each ring that character's fight was a callback to their final boss fight in their respective game. Because I recognized the one for Awakening and I think Three Houses because it was top of mind. But then the other two were games that we never got. And to be honest, I don't know if that particular aspect is randomized or not with the rings. But I thought it was a nice touch to basically call back to the rings' character's final boss.
Yeah, I believe if you do match up like the emblem ring against their specific boss, you'll get like additional dialogue.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just really cool. The other memorable fight for me was the last boss fight against the Dark Dragon, because it reminded me of Shining Force 1, where you could just basically turtle up your characters against the dragon and just constantly take bot shots at it. The maps were very similar in those two areas.
Well, Dark Dragon, Fel Dragon.
Yeah.
Tomato, tomato.
Yeah. So did we have any memories tied to this game?
Well, as you mentioned earlier, Gal, like this was another one. I had a string there where I was buying collector's editions I didn't want or didn't need, I guess I should say. Like I know, like not long before this, I think you were trying to get a copy of SMT5 collector's edition. And I managed to find one online and I just got it. And you ended up getting it somewhere else. And then I kind of forgot to cancel it. And got SMT5 collector's edition that I didn't, you know, like didn't really need. And this game came out right about the time when I was in the middle of moving. And so I don't remember where, somewhere along the way, I bought it on, I don't remember what it was, whether it was on Amazon and just had it shipped here to Alabama. Mm-hmm. But, Right when the game came out, I got this email from Target, and they're like, they're shipping, you know, it said we're shipping your copy of Fire Emblem Engage. And I'm like, wait a second, didn't I just get an email from Amazon that they were shipping it? And like, oh, no, apparently I had bought the collector's edition on Target, forgotten about it, and then bought it again later on Amazon, and had it shipped to the completely different, I had the one shipped to Alabama and the other one shipped to my old apartment in Virginia. And so I didn't actually get the thing until months later when I went to go clean out my place and move out from Virginia.
So were you able to return one of them, or did you just flip it on eBay?
I still got the thing. It's sitting in my closet. I have two copies of this. One that's never been opened.
Well, you might be able to flip it now.
I haven't priced it. You'll have to tell me what the price is, Kel. That's in that part of the show.
Yeah, I only got to like the first used one I saw, and it was around 130, I want to say.
Well, maybe I need to actually investigate this.
Because Fire Emblem collector's editions can go for a pretty penny. I know that. Because Okay, never mind. It was around $86, which it wasn't it 90 new?
I think so.
Yeah, this one's a sealed one, but it's also kind of banged up.
Oh, mine's in perfect shape. Never been opened. Well, there we go. I got some homework after this show.
Yeah, you could probably flip it for a decent amount if it's still sealed. See, every time, the one time that happened to me was with Monster Hunter Stories 2, and that was a glitch with GameStop system.
Oh.
Where somehow I managed to order it as a with my GameStop account and with a guest account, and I couldn't get it to cancel. So I figured, well, I can just take it to the regular GameStop to get my money back. But before I do that, I want to see if anybody on our staff wants it. Because, you know, I always throw that offer out to people if I end up with extra stuff. Because, yeah, we're all collectors on staff. Well, sort of. Not bad. And Phil ended up buying my extra Monster Hunter Stories too.
Wasn't that the one that got lost for a while? And
yeah, they sent it to like another apartment in his complex, and I was kind of pissed about it because it's like at that point there's nothing I could do other than give Phil his money back. But then I'm out $100 for this lost item. But luckily they found it.
I remember this drama.
So yeah. As far as my associative memories, talking with Chris on our private chat about how mad this game was and making fun of Colgate-kun the whole time.
I've heard called Pepsi-kun at times too.
Yeah, Pepsi Man is the one that I've heard too. I just think Colgate-kun's funny, and I like Pepsi. So, you know, that would have been hilarious to name that character Pepsi, since you could rename him.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any associative memories, or?
Yeah, no, nothing really stuck out to me, much like this game.
I don't blame you. You know how January is kind of a dumping ground for movies? I feel like sometimes it's the same thing for games, and this one definitely feels like a dumping ground game.
They had a Fire Emblem game, and they had to get it out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, not to date this podcast, but we have Switch 2 news coming up in 2 months. Odds of a new Fire Emblem for Switch 2?
Again, still holding out hope for that Genealogy of the Holy War remake.
We can hope. We can hope.
That being said, there was a delay with getting this show out. We had some scheduling conflicts, so you're going to get a show next week, and I do believe that is the coveted Final Fantasy 16 Bloodbath.
I don't think people are going to be met on 16.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of opinions.
Good, bad, and other.
Yeah, I'm team good because I adored that game. David and Wheels famously hated it, and I don't know how Ryan Pascal and Paul felt. I guess we'll find out. Maybe they're neutral. Maybe they're on team hate, and I'm going to be bullied into hating it.
I still feel bad about Persona 5.
It's okay. I got over it. Plus, it was funny. But I am a massive Final Fantasy fan, so it's going to take a lot of convincing. Because not to burn material, but I really liked that game. So, that being said, thank you, Josh, and thank you, Cassandra, for hanging out tonight.
You're welcome.
And thank you, Matt, for hanging out and editing and listening to this MathFest.
It's all good.
And thank you, listener, for joining us tonight. Tune in next week for Final Fantasy 16. In the meantime, have a good rest of your week, and we shall see you later.